Welcome to Reasonably Fit, the podcast where we'll teach you everything you need to know about health and fitness, but in a much more reasonable way than you might be used to.
Think about us as your friendly fitness experts, but we're chill about it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Reasonably Fit. We are excited to be here. We are recording this on a Monday. And Lauren releases us Tuesday morning, very early.
We did exactly what we said we would not do again after skipping a week a couple weeks ago.
So we went on our trip, and it was a weekend trip to a gun quit. And it seems like every single time after a trip, we're like, okay, well, we're going to get our lives back together. We're going to do laundry. We're going to, you know, just situate ourselves after our trip. And inevitably, someone is sick.
One of the four.
Right. One of the four is sick, and it kind of just derails the whole plan for the entire week. And we're like, we can't podcast. This time, Lauren and I were both feeling a little bit ill. Lauren definitely more so than me. And you ended up getting a 104 fever.
Yeah. Highest of my life.
Your PR. Progressively overloaded and peaked with the 104 fever. But luckily, some Advil kicked in. You were able to kind of tame that. But it was a little bit... You were feeling rough, rougher than I've seen you in a long time.
Yeah, I don't get sick that often, and when I do, I feel like I like mentally. This is not medical advice, but I like talk myself out of being sick. Like I really do. I feel like sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm not really getting sick, and I just like manifest being better, and it just never gets that bad. And obviously, that's not real if you're like if you have a real illness. But this time I was trying to do it. I was like, no, this is not happening. I was feeling feverish, and I was like, no, I don't get fevers, and I really don't. I never get fevers.
Yeah,
and
you run cooler, right?
Yeah, whenever I take my temperature, I'm like 97 point whatever.
Something. Yeah,
and so I took it, and it was like 99. I was like, okay, for me, that's actually like a little
like 3 degrees
of a fever. Yeah. And then. It was like that night when we put the kids to bed, I was like, I'm feeling awful. Like I haven't felt, and I was like, I'm burning.
You were like, you looked white. Yeah, for sure.
And I took my temp and it was like 103.7 or something. I was like, so I texted my two best friends are nurses. And I was like, I hate to be that friend who texts you like about something medical. But I was like, but how high of a fever? Like, can I manage a almost 104 fever at home? Or do I need to actually go somewhere? And they really helped me out. And like they were so, I mean... I was like, I feel so bad. And they were like, you're not a random person. You're like our other best friend. It's okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, they helped me out. And I waited until the morning, went to urgent care, got negative for flu and COVID and everything. So just had to wait it out. And it went away within 48 hours, I would say.
Yeah. And I think if this was like 5-6 years ago or something, I think we would have forced the issue and had recorded a podcast at our usual time. And no matter like how sick we were and just forced the issue, and it would have resulted in a subpar podcast. Yeah. We would have been upset, even more upset because we did it. We probably would have reshot it today anyway. And, you know, I think we're just trying to be reasonable podcasters, right? Yeah. It's just like there's just so many like parallels that we can draw with this sort of more rational approach to things. Be like, okay, it's not the end of the world. If we do this on a Thursday, we can still make this work on a Monday. And that's what we're doing. And if we had to skip this week, then that's fine. We could do it the following week.
Our listeners are like, absolutely not. That is not okay. No, we're going to try our best to always stay on track. But yes, life happens. We understand that for everyone else out there. And so we hope that people give us that same grace.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, but we're getting this one out here on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
A 24-hour turnover. No, it's like an 8-hour turnover for me. But we'll get it done.
Yep.
Okay, and we're excited because today is kind of a fun one because we decided to go over the trends that are happening in the fitness industry in 2022. So the things that we've been seeing over and over again throughout this year, we're like a little more than halfway through the year. And what we've been seeing, we want to go over what we really love, what we don't love so much, maybe borderline hate. I was just gonna say I hate using that word, but it's not my favorite word. But there are some things that really get our blood boiling, you know.
Yeah,
so
sure.
We're gonna talk about all the trends, how we feel about them. Each one we're gonna just go over really quickly. We're just gonna kind of give our opinion about them and then give them a rating, a personal rating out of 10. Very subjective.
Yeah, we're excited about this approach because I think for us, we tend to dive into every single possible detail and exception and nuance with all the things that we do. And so to kind of force a more succinct evaluation, I think will be just more fun to listen to at times. Yeah. So this is just a good way to kind of change up the pace a little bit.
Yeah, we did a little less preparation like together for this. So we don't actually know necessarily where each other falls on some of these topics. So it'll be a little interesting to see.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First one I want to talk about. This one is the one, well, I won't. I was going to preface it with my feelings about it, but I won't. I'll preface it with just what it is. It's the carnivore diet. Mm. This has been coming up a lot. The carnivore diet is a diet where all you eat is meat. You eat no produce. You eat no grains. You eat no beans, legumes. It literally is only meat.
So this is, I was just shocked at what is currently out there right now, and people are eating raw red meat and all sorts of different cuts, and like they show these like very Instagrammable platters of raw meat, and people are just devouring this stuff.
Wait, but that actually can't be like someone's gonna die, or has anybody died?
No one so far has died or has reported any sort of illness. In the comment section, you'll see people saying like, actually, you know, my cousin or my uncle, or like they tried to do this and they got salmonella and stuff like that. But so far I haven't seen anyone like renounce their carnivore diet ways, but I was just shocked that people are doing this. And the way they're kind of explaining it as that you have to find a reputable butcher or like, you know, meat handler or whatever. And that's how you don't get sick.
But what is the point of eating it raw? Like, what are they saying are the benefits of eating it raw? Because I feel like when it first was coming out, it was just about eating meat. Yeah. But it was cooked.
I think they're arguing that when you're cooking it, that some of the nutrients maybe get cooked off or something like that.
That's the argument with, like, raw diets in general, with, like, vegetables and fruits and stuff like that. But, I've never heard about that with meat.
Yeah, it's actually wild. And so when you get into these rabbit holes, and I've seen people like at Liver King, and this guy is just, he's drinking raw animal blood, like in shot glass form. And he's just is having pounds and pounds of liver every week and all that sort of stuff. And it is pretty extreme, to say the least. But now I will say that organ meats are actually very prevalent in other cultures, especially in Asian culture. Like when I was younger, I would just eat all sorts of different cuts of meat in different parts of like cows and pigs and, you know, other sorts of animals and stuff. And it would be like small intestines. It would be beef tongue and beef cheek and hearts and like just things that like when I say out loud, I'm a little bit like queasy about. And I would remember like anytime I'd have friends over or I'd have friends over to our restaurant, like I would want to try to like hide those details out because I didn't want them to think that I was weird and I ate weird foods. Like I wanted to fit in with the whole American culture. So it's funny to me that now these sorts of organ meats are like highly coveted and all that. But, you know, Asian cultures ate it because they knew how nutritious and how healthy it was. Like an interesting concept is that certain organs require certain nutrients and vitamins in order for them to run at a optimal like function level, basically. And so if you eat an organ that needs, let's say, or that needs like more vitamin A and D and whatever, you eat that organ, it actually improves the quote unquote improves the function of the organ that you're eating. So like if you are eating liver, it improves the function of your own liver.
Really?
Stuff like that, which I think is interesting. Like I don't know how much of that is necessarily pseudoscience or whatever, but I do know that Asian culture is big on that. And but we cook it. We cook it in broths and we cook it on the stove. And like
you include it in a holistic diet. Exactly. With like vegetables, it's not like, and
it's like, oh, it's a more reasonable approach. It's like, okay, let's just add it to our what we're doing right now, not make our entire plate this like unappetizing raw meal of meat because we think it's more optimal. It's like anytime you try to hack and try to make things more optimal than it needs to be, like you start to lose some of the other benefits, like eating vegetables like that. No, I don't think any diet has ever said like, don't eat a vegetable.
I've never heard of it before. I was blown away when I actually read, I was like, I have to actually read like the details of this diet to to believe that it's actually saying not to eat vegetables. Because I kept seeing people say that and being like, I'm sure that that's false. Yeah. I'm sure that that can't be true. Nobody is ever going to say that you shouldn't eat vegetables.
Yeah.
And there it is.
There it is.
It is.
So it actually says, like, in like you've read some blogs on it
or whatever? Yeah, I'll give you the rundown of like the Cliff Notes version. I mean, this is literally my quick Google search in this moment right now, but it says, what do you eat on a carnivore diet? The answer is you eat only meat, fish, eggs, and some animal products. You exclude all other food groups, including vegetables, fruits, grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Now, I will say that I have been looking into getting organ meats into just our diet in general. Mm-hmm. Like, there are companies that actually do ground beef, and they'll package in like 7% liver, 3% heart, and like just like stuff like that. And apparently it's like super beefy tasting, for lack of a better word. So yeah, I do, again, see the understanding and the appeal of organ meats. I just don't understand the appeal of eating it raw and excluding everything else in the process.
Yeah.
But I think this came to be because you have to be kind of extreme on social media in order for it to be sort of widespread. So I imagine if we put this clip on Instagram, we're going to get absolutely demolished by carnivore people. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, we stand by it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think I often get nervous because we eat an omnivore's diet. So we...
Shocking. What a statement so shocking. In 2022.
But there are a lot of vegans and vegetarians who get very passionate as well. And so I've actually been a little nervous about some of the clips we put out where we talk about, if we ever talk about what we eat, it's like, we definitely talk about having fish, having chicken, having meat.
Yeah.
And I'm always worried like, oh no, I hope I'm not offending any vegans or vegetarians by saying that. And now it's like the complete opposite. Yeah. Like, we don't want to offend any carnivores. I'm like, I don't know. This is what's happening right now.
I mean, if it works for them, it works for them. But for our personal rating, let's do a 3, 2, 1, and then we'll both say our rating at the same time.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
All
okay.
Right. 3, 2, 1. 2. 3 out of 10. 2. Okay.
3.
I give it a 3 just for the organ meat aspect. I think I like the education around organ meat in general, and makes me feel less weird about my own culture.
Love it.
Which I shouldn't anyway, but it does.
I gave it a 2 only because I would have given it a 1 if you hadn't brought up that your component. Meat thing. Yeah. Because I had 0 positive things to really say about it.
I also really like red meat too, so.
True, fair enough.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
Okay, next one is going to be wearable technology. So that's Apple Watches, Aura Rings, just things that you can wear on your body that are going to give you information about what's going on.
Mm.
So obviously, this stuff has been around for a while. Like, Fitbits were kind of the first one, I feel like, and they've just been sort of getting more and more prevalent. I feel like everyone has something on their wrist or something on their body that they're like getting information from.
Yep.
But this was one of the top, when I looked up like top trends of 2022, this was one of the ones that continued to come up the most.
Yeah. I mean, I like them, especially as a data-oriented person. I definitely enjoy like different like little facts. I can totally see how if you become too obsessive about it, you might really start to change a lot of your behaviors and actions, which I think it wants you to do. But just to meet kind of like these objective markers that the watch or whatever has set out for you, right?
Yeah.
Like 10,000 steps or your activity like marker of like, I need to get 150 minutes of activity per day or whatever it is set. You start to really just go out of your way to try to meet these rather than thinking about things in a little bit more of like a holistic standpoint of like, I should move more.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I also think that that can be really positive for a lot of people. I think about my mom a lot because she has an Apple Watch now, but she used to have a Fitbit. And when she first got her Fitbit, it just was like very basic and just had that 10,000 step goal. And I remember, were you there when we slept over that one time? And
yeah,
she was like, we were sleeping over at my parents' house and it's like 9 p.m. We're watching Jeopardy or whatever with my parents, like just kind of chilling out. The day was over.
Yeah.
And my mom's like, I still have 2,000 steps left or whatever. And so she starts doing jumping jacks, mountain climbers, running up and down the stairs. And I was like, I mean, how can you say that's bad? Like, she was having fun with it. She was laughing about it.
Yeah.
And she was moving her body at 9 p.m. when she would have been sitting on the couch. So I always reference back to that moment because it was a very positive moment, right? Mm-hmm. She was like enjoying that challenge of getting a little bit more movement in. on the flip side, I can see that being a very, like, if she wasn't with her family and if we weren't all laughing about it and if it wasn't this kind of like joyous moment, yeah. I could see that being really negative, like that she was punishing herself that for not getting her steps. And so she's like, you know, you can see this in almost like a side by side of like one is light and one is dark. And in the light, she's laughing, she's doing jumping jacks, everybody's laughing. And the dark one, she's in a room by herself, just like angry that she hadn't met her goal and like trying to punish herself by doing jumping jacks. It's like the same visual, but with completely different context.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know that it can be a positive or a negative when it comes to those sorts of components of the tracking part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, something else that it tracks is calories. They all have a calorie tracker. Somebody actually recently, so I should give this story first, I guess, is that I wear an Apple Watch. And it's always in, I always have it on because it's in our videos and people always mention, especially if I ever say anything about like how I don't like calorie counting and I don't really like tracking, that it just doesn't work for me personally. People are always like, well, why do you wear an Apple Watch? And the reason I wear an Apple Watch is because my mom got one and Amazon sent her two. And this is probably illegal, but she was like, do you want it? And I was like, yeah.
Thanks, Jeff Bezos.
Maybe Amazon's going to sue me now, but and if they want the watch back, I'll give it back because I don't really use it that much except for to tell time and to check the weather and to find my phone. There's like a little thing that you can swipe
up. You use that all the time.
It's literally 99% of what I use it for is to find my phone because I'm always losing it. And Kendrick thinks it's for the weather because he'll say, Mom, is it going to be a hot day today? Check your watch. So I check my watch for the weather. So it's just funny because I think that it gives off a certain, like if you see someone wearing any sort of tracker, it almost gives off a certain like vibe about them. Like, oh, they're counting their steps. They're counting their calories. And that's 100% not what I'm using it for. And I actually recently someone said, what is your calorie ring set to? Like they asked me on Instagram and I had no idea what they were talking about. Yeah. I had to look in the phone and I was like, oh, there's like all these different rings that you
functions.
Can. Yeah. This like activity function. Oh, and sometimes it comes up and I just ignore it. I just don't even look at it. So I didn't even know that you actually can put in like a goal amount of steps, a goal amount of calories, a goal amount of all these different things for yourself.
Yeah.
And for me, I know personally for me, that would be a really negative thing to focus on. I know if I set a calorie goal, that would mean because I have a calorie goal, now that means I have to track everything that I eat. So that means now I have to start writing down everything that I eat or weighing everything I eat or really focusing on reading the labels and measuring and all that stuff. And that just takes away so much of the joy of living and eating for me that I know that that would just put me into a really dark place. So it's what I guess I would love as a component to some of these wearable devices is a way to toggle off that like option, basically.
Yeah.
So just say like, I don't want to see, because I didn't even realize, but it comes up every day. And now I look at it, I'm like, oh, I ignore it. And I can ignore it because I know personally how bad that is for me. So I'm very, you know, self-aware at this point. But 10 years ago, it would have been the only thing I was looking at.
Yeah. Toggle's a great idea. Like, I mean, right now, like on the new iPhones, it's like, do you want to allow this app to track your activity? And it's like, yes or no. And it's like, usually like, no. And it's like, okay, do you want this watch to give you weight loss information or advice or subliminally tell you to lose weight?
Yeah.
Yes or no.
Yes or no.
I think that's a great idea. Now with wearable tech, I think I actually don't have anything right now, but if I were to get one, instead of focusing it on the output or whatever workout metrics there were involved, I would primarily use it as a way to assess recovery. Mm. So like, how is my sleep quality? How's my resting heart rate trending? Like things like that that are happening outside of the workout itself. Like what we talk about all the time, like during our workouts, as long as progressive overload is happening, as long as we're challenging ourselves, as long as we're, you know, working out at a certain intensity that keeps on allowing progressive overload to happen, like we know good things are happening, right? And if our nutrition is generally on track with what we've been doing in the past, like good things are happening. So I don't really need to worry about the workout aspect. I'm more concerned about the recovery aspect and how I can improve my sleep. And that could be things like getting blackout curtains or changing the temperature in the room or going to bed earlier, things like that. Those are easily in my control and I can track it across a trend. And I feel like it's a little bit more of a long-term play. Whereas when you think about just the workout output itself, you are thinking about it in such a short-term way. Like, I have to hit my calories for this day. I have to hit my my steps or whatever it is. And it just becomes more of like a panicky induced feeling, at least for me.
Yeah. And I also think that it makes you do it. It makes you choose activities in a different way, right? Like, you could do 100 kettlebell swings
and it
would count zero steps, right? Because you're standing still, but you're doing a lot of output. So there's just different ways. And so I don't know, like, if there are other, I know the Oura Ring, I think, is more like heart rate variability. And so, like, that probably would be a better way of measuring something like a kettlebell swing, as like counting it as exercise, versus like if you're only just looking at steps or you're only looking at miles walked or whatever it is, then obviously certain exercises aren't gonna translate to that, and then you might be less drawn to them, even if they are like more aligned with your goals and are gonna help you get stronger and all those things.
Yeah, totally true. All right, so let's give our ratings.
Okay.
All right, 3, 2, 1, 5.5.
Oh, we're close. Okay.
And I just introduced a decimal, so now we just made it real, real nuanced.
What? Why the decimal?
I think, well, literally in my head, I was like, it's more than 50% good for me. I think it's doing more good than harm, but not as high as people would think.
Yeah.
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 I guess you're in the same boat with a 6.
Yeah. I'm surprised that I went higher than you, but I think that it, if they're used in... It really depends on the user, right? Mm-hmm. And so it depends a little bit on how you're approaching using them. But I think that they can be really great. And I think they can give you some really valuable information that you can't really get otherwise. Like, I think about, you know, running on a treadmill, and the information that you used to see there was only like distance and calories.
Yeah.
And now there's like, there is so much more to what they can tell you about your heart rate and about your recovery and all that. And that's actually very cool to know what's going on in your body. As long as you can come at it from a little bit more of a like just data oriented standpoint, and not as much of an emotional standpoint, which I think is where I would tend to come at it if I got too involved in reading the information. So for me, it's like it offers a lot of value as long as it's not taken to an extreme in terms of how you're actually taking on that information.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Next big trend is home gyms.
Ooh.
This one is one that we're quite familiar with, as we have built our own recently.
Yeah. I would say pre-pandemic, the average home gym is like a really dusty treadmill and a couple of like weights that you got from Modell's or Dick's Sporting Goods, right? Yeah. But now the home gym has really elevated, especially with new technology arising. Like, there's Peloton, there's Tonal, there's all sorts of different technology out there that's made home gyms cooler and more popular. And I think with the advent of that, people working out more from home, people are like, oh, actually, people are doing this now more consistently. Mm. Now they see more just like being able to invest more in a home gym setup because they see so many people being successful at home. So they're like, oh, why don't I get some dumbbells? Why don't I get some kettlebells, some barbells? I mean, some people have full scale gyms at home like we do, but a lot of it is more from a business perspective. Right. But a lot of people, especially on a Rise program, have these completely outfitted home gyms. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It's so cool. I mean, I remember my mom used to work out in her basement. Well, she had a basement home gym, but she would never work out in it because it was like dark, it was dusty, it just had a couple dumbbells. Like, it was so uninviting, and she like didn't want to go down there. And recently, but when the pandemic started, she's like, okay, this is pretty much my only option. So I'm going to add some more light down here. I'm going to put some more equipment down. She put down some turf, some rubber flooring. Like, she really decked it out. And now she goes down every day because it's actually like a nice part of her house, and it's like an enjoyable space to be in. And I think that that's what people are starting to do, is like, okay, I'm not just gonna throw a bunch of like weights that I picked up at a garage sale into my garage and like hope that I go in there every once in a while. Like, I'm going to create a dedicated space for doing my workouts. But yeah, I mean, I really think that at the start of the pandemic, when people were like unsure how long this was going to go on, people started to really invest in their own home gym spaces and just make them feel so much more inviting and so much more enjoyable to be in.
Right? Yeah, I think that that's a huge underrated aspect of the home gym that you just talked about, is you want to make sure that you set up the space so you want to be there, right? Yeah, if it is dark and dingy and there's one flashing light bulb overhead and you just like have a couple of weights around. Like, that is not in an area that's like going to be inviting. So really thinking about lighting and even like how it's painted and how it's organized, like you want it to feel like really nice and comfortable so that you want to be in there.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people were balancing having a home gym and having a gym membership. So a lot of times people didn't want to invest in their home gym because they're also paying a membership fee somewhere, right? Yeah. And so they were like, well, the home gym is almost like a secondary, like just in case part of their house, right? Like if I can't make it to the gym, at least I can do a workout at home. But so they never wanted to really invest in, you know, nicer equipment or nicer space. But I think now people are like, oh, if I just like put up this initial investment to create this really nice space, I don't have to pay gym fees indefinitely. And it actually ends up saving you a lot of money in the long run. Mm-hmm. But I think that was hard to wrap your head around in the beginning when you felt like you were paying for like multiple things at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. And not only are you going to save money in the long run, but also just time overall, time and convenience. Like that for us, that's the biggest thing. Yeah. And I think anyone who has kids or who has a job that's kind of different from your standard 9-to-5 sort of time set, like the convenience factor is second to none, because you can either just roll out of bed and like just go into the next room, or late at night after you put the kids down, that's what we do, we just jump right downstairs. And like if we had to go drive half an hour to get to the gym, get our workout in, then drive a half hour to get back home, like that just wouldn't work in the long grand scheme of things. So the time aspect is so key. Now, I will say that I do miss the gym for like having a whole array of machines like at your disposal. There's also just more energy at a gym, like just people around all doing the same thing. Like there's more energy. So I get a little bit more amped up from there. But beyond that, for right now, the convenience and time is just completely outweighs that aspect for me. So I'm very much into home gyms.
Yeah. I definitely miss the community, which is why we still take classes at a local studio for I think the group classes for me helps me to get like scratch that itch a little bit, right? Where I can like be around other people, but then I can do my strength workouts at home. I mean, when I'm doing, if I was going to go to a gym and do a Rise workout, like I'd pretty much keep to myself. And so it wouldn't be like, I don't need the community in that component of my workout. But if I want to go do like a group class or yoga or something like that, like, yeah, I'm not going to do yoga by myself. Like 100%, I know that. So I do need to be in a place where everybody else around me is doing the same thing. So I think that you just kind of have to pick and choose the spots that work for you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, moving on to, we got a verdict. Oh, yeah. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
8. 9. Ooh.
Boom.
And that makes sense because I still miss a little bit of the community more so than you do of being in a physical gym. So that was my only knock on home gym.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, next one, we're going to go with inclusive fitness. So this has been a topic, when I looked up trends, this one continued to be at the top. This is basically talking about more diversity in marketing fitness, hiring more people of color at physical locations, more inclusive sizing from fitness companies in terms of clothing, just a lot more inclusion of a lot more people when it comes to fitness.
I think for us, this was like the basis of why we started Achieve Fitness in the first place, right? Like that was back in 2012. We made our gym, and the whole foundation of it all was that we just wanted to make people feel accepted, because people didn't feel accepted in traditional gyms. It was always like this air of uncomfortableness, where the fit people, quote unquote, had this air of like elitism, and the other people were just not feeling like very comfortable in that gym setting. And so we made everything about Achieve just feel welcoming, inviting, so that no matter what your experience level, fitness level, you know, we welcomed you with open arms. And that was like the cornerstone of our gym. And I think that's what made it really successful. And now moving forward, like, I mean, obviously, we love this sort of trend into making it's probably more like targeted now, right? Yeah. It's like more specific areas of inclusion rather than just being like, we like everyone
more broad.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's what, and that's important. I think that we were doing early on was like, everyone is welcome. You're welcome here, which is awesome. And that is still how we feel. And we want everybody to always feel welcome. But I think that now companies are trying to be more explicit about who's welcome, just mm-hmm. so that, because they're trying to make sure that people who have felt excluded previously are now explicitly being included. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you don't have to convince someone who has the stereotypical fit look that they're included in the gym space. Like, they don't, you don't have to try to convince them that they are welcome there because they already feel welcome there, right? Yeah. And so I think there's a little bit more of a push to say like, hey, you can also come in. Like, you can also be here. And more importantly, hiring people of color, hiring people of different body sizes, hiring people of different abilities, so that people who look like them, feel like them, move like them, actually feel like, oh, I can see myself in that space. Mm. Whereas before, it's like lip service a little bit, right? To just say like, everybody welcome. And it's like, but am I really? You kind of sometimes have to see it.
Right. Yeah. We were kind of like the first evolution. Now it's just continued down more levels of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I feel like we get lots of DMs like every other day, basically being like, as a fellow Asian fitness professional, as a fellow Asian, you know, person in this field, you know, and then they go on and, you know, say some nice words and all that. And it is like, it was definitely eye-opening, especially the first few times of like, oh, I don't see myself as like a figure in this sort of like way, but I do now understand the importance of it. Like, actually the other day, there was an Asian tonal model that popped up as the first thing as I tapped the screen of the tonal. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool, actually. And I think in the past, I would have been like, I don't really care, like, if there's representation, like, and blah, 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 like, it doesn't, like, whatever. And I think that was probably like a defense mechanism. Like, because I'm like, in my mind, it's probably like, if I overly cared, I would get really down about it. But it was like a defense mechanism of like, oh, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. But like, the fact that I noticed it means that I do care, right? So it was like, it's cool that it's happening.
Yeah. And then another component of this has been more inclusive sizing with clothing, which we just touched on at the beginning of the introduction of this topic. But that is something that we're seeing a lot more of. We're seeing not just an introduction of more sizing, like more options. I think now a lot of companies are saying like, we go from extra, extra small to 5X or more. And like, we're going to make sure that all of those sizes are in stock and try to do our best to actually offer inclusive sizing. And then not only that, but also showing their models wearing those sizes of clothes, right? Because I think a lot of times it was like, yeah, we offer up to extra, like 2XL, but you're only going to see the extra small models. And so like, nobody could actually, again, with representation, like, you, just because it's there, if you can't see yourself in that clothing, if you're looking at a model who looks completely differently from you, how could you ever envision yourself wearing what they're wearing? Because you're like, what is that even going to look like on me? Like, could that work on my body? Like, you just don't even know. And so you're never going to even try to wear those clothes, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, brands like Gymshark and Lululemon come to mind. Like, they were brands that popped up and it was all like extra, extra small models and or extremely muscular people. And they had this very certain look. And now, you know, flash forward, you know, 5 years later, they've evolved and their marketing is totally different. Their sizing is totally different. So it's super cool with how that evolution has happened. Yeah. And hopefully more and more companies realize that. And I think it's actually even more, like, I don't want it to be like a competition, but even more impressive when these companies are offering these really vast variety of sizes, because now it's moving even further beyond just lip service, where this isn't even necessarily helping their bottom line, right? To carry that much inventory across that many different sizes. And you have to imagine, like, this is like amongst hundreds of different products that they offer, like, that increases their inventory by so much. And it's not necessarily a fact that it's going to size out or sell out as well as, like, let's say a medium or more generic size. They're basically putting their money where their mouth is by offering all these sorts of sizes at all these different products and then marketing it in the way that they're doing.
Yeah. And I think that it may be like, it might be a risk earlier on, because their whole market has been a medium size, right? Yeah. Like their whole market has been that, but that's because they haven't marketed to other sizes, that's true, right? Yeah. So it's almost like they just have to give themselves the chance to access that market, right? It's not that there are people who are size 4XL, 5XL who aren't buying clothes.
Yeah,
they need clothes. Everybody needs to buy clothes. They just aren't, they're not going to Gymshark 10 years ago because of course they're not going to shop there, right? So like Gymshark had to take that risk, quote unquote, to increase their sizing and maybe have some months or years where those clothes just were sitting in a warehouse because people didn't know that they had the opportunity to actually now go shop there. But eventually now that they've expanded their marketing and that they're showing more bodies in their clothing, people are like, oh, that's actually somewhere that I can shop. And now they're going to get those consumers as well. So it's like, it feels like a risk early on, but I think ultimately it's a great move for any company to expand their audience and to be able to reach more people.
I think there was a cool interview I listened to from, I think it was someone from Buff Bunny Collection. And I believe they offer more sizes than your average, like smaller niche fitness company, apparel company.
Yeah.
And the way she described the challenges was interesting, where she's like, it's not just, you know, you make a small, medium, large, and then from large to XL, from XL to double XL. It's not just a mathematic equation where you just like kind of scale it appropriately. It is like they have to resize everything for each level that you go up. And so, and it magnifies.
Right, you can't just keep getting like longer and wider because like people aren't 10 feet tall. It's like you have to figure out the ratios of
exactly.
everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because before that, I just assumed like, oh, just apply the calculation right. and then send it out to your warehouse and, you know, they'll make the magic happen. But it's like each one and for each different product has its own separate scaling strategy. Mm. And the way she was saying was like from a small to a medium, you could apply a formula, but from a small to a large, it changes. So you can imagine the difference from a medium to a triple XL, like they have to make all sorts of different calculations and all that. I never actually thought about it from the company's perspective, the different challenges. So I think it's actually even more cool, the companies that are offering this, because they're taking it to the next level with it.
I love it. I love it. It's like an evolution of the way, it can be an evolution of the way that even clothing companies like start their baseline too. Because if you look at the population as a whole, the population as a whole doesn't fit what clothing companies market, if that makes sense, right? Like if the average size of a clothing company is a medium, the average size of the country is not a medium. So like, I think that maybe the move, and of course I am not an expert in clothing design or anything like that, but maybe the move is, okay, move the needle to the, like a little further to the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're designing. Like you're not designing from a small, you're designing from an XL. And then you have to spread out evenly to either side.
Right.
Right. Instead of trying to scale from an extra small to a 5XL, like why don't you try to start in the middle and spread out that way?
Work its way down.
Of course, I know nothing about this. So if anybody's a designer out there and they're just like rolling their eyes at me, fine. But I'm just saying that maybe this has created some innovation for people who are like, okay, yes, there are going to be challenges, but that's the case for anything where you're trying to push forward and be more inclusive or just create like the next generation of products is like there's going to be challenges. And just saying like, oh man, I don't know, it's too hard, I can't figure it out, like that's not a good excuse, right? So I appreciate the challenges, but I also really appreciate people saying like, yeah, it's a challenge, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't figure out ways around that.
All right. Verdict.
Inclusive fitness.
3, 2, 1, go.
11.
10. Nah, I'm not going to go 11. It's too far.
Fine. Okay, 10. 10 across the board for that one.
All right, so in typical pack fashion, we thought we were going to spend like 2 to 3 minutes on each topic. We have a bunch more topics lined up. And with each last one, I think we spend like 10 to 12 minutes on each one. So we are going to accelerate the process. So for the last, how many do we have? Like 5 more, 4 more?
Yeah.
We're going to go rapid fire.
Okay.
Or rapid fire for us means like still like probably 3, 4 minutes, but that's still an improvement from what we're doing. So we're going to speed it up a little bit.
Okay.
Next topic.
Walking.
Ooh, walking. So I also like this as it's kind of like an indirect inclusive way of Actually, why don't you introduce the topic in the first place? just general thoughts on walking.
It's just become a lot more popular to mention that walking is a form of fitness. I think that's the thing, is like it used to be almost like walking was a form of recovery when it came to fitness. Like, oh, if you're on an off day, like just go, you can just go for a walk, and like not even appreciating that walking is fitness and that walking is actually very good for you, and especially walking outdoors and, you know, getting some sunlight and all of those things. So just it has become a lot more popular to say like, hey, going out for a walk is absolutely considered a workout. It's considered working on your health. Like these are all very, very beneficial things for you to do.
Yeah. And it's like mentioned almost as like a primary form of exercise, yeah, which I think is really cool. And so that has been a lot more mainstream. And what I was going to say is that it's almost like an indirect way of including more people,
yeah,
right? Because like some people can't just go out and do kettlebell swings or do a CrossFit workout. But, you know, a lot of the population can start with walking. And that just seems like such a more accessible way to start the conversation. Instead of like giving visuals of like an intense HIIT workout, it's like, You can go on a walk that can jumpstart your fitness journey, yeah, and then you can take it from there. And yeah, I think it's super cool.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right. Is that all we need to say about it? Are we moving on?
Okay. Verdict. 3, 2, 1, go.
9. 10.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I said 9. It's a 10. I just feel like I couldn't give too many 10s. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, we've been going on walks a lot more, especially now that we moved out from the city. And we love it.
Yeah.
We have some of our best like brainstorming conversations, and we get sunlight, we get a little tan, and some exercise too. Like it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Next is going to be recovery equipment, things like Theraguns, vibrating foam rollers. There's a lot more out there now, a lot more pieces of equipment you can buy to help with aiding with recovery.
Yeah. So my opinion is that I actually enjoy the feeling that the foam roller gives. It just feels like a painful but nice sort of like, you know, way to kick off the workout. And so initially when foam rollers first came out and all these sort of like self-myofascial release tools came out, they were very like, the claims were that they broke up muscle adhesions and it really improved your muscle tissue quality and your flexibility got better. Like there were a lot of big claims behind it. So everyone jumped on board. And now the research has been showing that that's not happening. Muscle knots aren't getting broken up. Adhesions aren't getting broken up. Scar tissue takes a lot more pressure to actually break up and all that. And so people are now going on the other side of the spectrum and saying you shouldn't even do any of these things. You know, we're kind of somewhere in the middle. Like if it feels good for you and you like it, you have the time, you know, I don't think 5 minutes is going to be the end of the world. And we actually think that doing it consistently over time, like there is research saying that a few minutes of it, of foam rolling will actually improve short-term flexibility. And if you're combining that with a sound strength training program and you do that over the long haul, I think the net effect is very positive. You just don't want to think that there's going to be some sort of magical cure happening really in the short term. You don't want to think that by putting a Theragun on your hamstring because you got a hamstring strain or a cramp that it's going to magically cure that. Like you just want to think of it as kind of like a general holistic part of the recovery puzzle.
Yeah, I think that Theragun specifically, or like anything, I don't know if that's like, is that the official like, is that a company name?
It's kind of like Kleenex to tissue paper,
okay,
right?
So a massage gun, I should say, yeah, where it's like pushing onto your muscles in a like vibrating
rapid way.
It's, I think, you know, everyone, it looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things where you're
put it in slow motion and looks cool.
Yeah, it just looks cool. And looks therapeutic. I think that it gets a lot more, you know, attention than it might necessarily need. Like it's, again, it's one of those things where it's a can't really hurt kind of situation, mm-hmm, not a you have to have this if you're not using this you're not recovering properly and you're gonna always be sore from your workouts and all this stuff. Like I think that it can get taken to an extreme and in people's minds like it's something that they think that they need, whereas it's more of a nice to have.
Very much a nice to have, especially at the price point. They're probably around $300 a pop. And so it's like, you know, not just like a really quick and easy purchase to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if it feels good, do it. And it could be like kind of like the wearable tech situation where like if you have it, you might just take more consideration into your recovery overall And so if that happens, that's a great benefit as well. Mm-hmm. But it is certainly not a need to have that is going to be a huge game changer to your overall recovery. It's just like a small part of the puzzle that can be helpful if you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Verdict. 3, 2, 1, go. Four.
Oh, our first wow. One.
Finally, we actually have some chemistry here.
All right. Next one is a resurgence of bodybuilding, even in the functional training crowd.
Okay. This is kind of a niche sort of trend that we're referring to. But, you know, here's our overall journey for the listener. Lauren and I started with bodybuilding style workouts because that's what the information was kind of like pushing. Then we sort of migrated into more powerlifting because powerlifting became cool. Then we moved on into more movement, kettlebell, mobility, like that sort of style of training. And then we moved on to Olympic lifting because CrossFit got big. And then during that time, we also got into like corrective exercises because that was big. Injury prevention was big. So we've gone through this like whole cycle of different sort of modalities within fitness. And now we're finally all the way back at bodybuilding. So it's come full circle. And the reason...
Yeah, maybe this isn't a trend except for just our own, yeah. Our own 2022 trajectory.
It's like a very subset of population that has gone through this entire cycle. And the reason why bodybuilding was like kind of like shunned initially was because it wasn't functional. It was very like the images being portrayed were very like stiff and robotic bodybuilders who like... would carry chicken and rice in a Tupperware and a gallon of water in their construction boots. Like that was the visual. And it's like, okay, if you want to be an athlete, you don't want to be like this person. If you want to not have your joints hurt all the time, like you probably don't want to lift like this person all the time. And so there was like a lot of like negativity around that.
Yeah.
But now with the advent of Instagram and TikTok, with more of these visual platforms, like suddenly, like being a bodybuilder is cool again, right? It's like people are like posing these bodybuilding poses under like these like intense lighting and shadow like pictures so that their muscles pop more. Everyone's getting tan and like whatnot. And so now everyone's like, oh, actually, bodybuilding is cool again. So it's like we're at the whole like cycle is being flipped back into now people are bodybuilding. And I'm seeing people that used to be like, you have to do functional training only. You have to just crawl around on the floor, do Turkish get-ups only, do planks only, like that sort of style of training are now like saying like, oh, bicep curls are cool, like triceps are cool.
I mean, literally, we had our friend who started out as a mentor, Phil Scurrito, who's yeah. been a kettlebell instructor forever and like is a very, very strong guy, like very strong with kettlebells, very strong with barbells. And like, in our minds, he's all in on powerlifting and kettlebell training yeah. and like
anti-bodybuilding.
Would never be doing bodybuilding. And we had him and Pam, his wife, come over and have a sleepover when we bought our new house and we wanted to just hang out with them. Sleepover. And a sleepover? Do adults call it sleepovers? Yeah. I don't know. They slept over. A visit.
The visual is us in the same room with like, you know, our pajamas on.
Okay. They came for a visit. I guess that would be more adult way of saying it. Anyway, you and Phil went down
that
to the
basement. That sounds even weirder, actually. They came for a visit in an adult way.
Anyway, you and Phil went down to the basement at one point, and you were both going to lift. And you were, like, trying to kind of feel each other out. Like, what are you going to do today? And you, basically, at the same time, you both were like, I've been doing a little more bodybuilding. You both started cracking up. Like, it was, like, unexpected for both of you yeah. to each other. Like, you were just surprised each
Lauren
other.
Lauren comes downstairs. We're doing, like, alternating hammer curls. Like, you're like, wait, what? I thought you guys were doing, like, kettlebell presses.
I was so shocked.
But, you know, obviously, we've gone through this whole history of different modalities and all that. So, basically, we've now understand that you don't have to, like, completely shun one modality because it doesn't fit like whatever your current modality is. And that's kind of like how we put Rise together. And if you ever have joined Rise, that's the whole reason why we have bodybuilding, we have powerlifting, we have the kettlebell lifts, we have mobility. Like we have this whole well-rounded approach because we've gone through all the approaches ourselves and we haven't like used dogma and shunned everything else.
Yeah.
And so we've just picked the best pieces, best components of each one. And now we just happen to be back in bodybuilding where we see a lot of the benefits now, not just being like, bodybuilding is dumb, right? And so...
But you're also not using bodybuilding exclusively. I think that's the difference now, is that you didn't go, you're not back to bodybuilding. You're that's just true. Like incorporating bodybuilding exercises back into a holistic, like well-rounded routine.
So
it's like we've seen it come back around, but it hasn't taken over your workouts. You're not just doing bicep curls. You're like starting with a heavier lift. You're doing some power development. You're doing some functional movements. You're doing mobility. So it's like all of that. And then you're going to finish your workout with some lateral raises and bicep curls. And like, it's just nice. It's a nice way to add in a little bit more just like muscle burn and like a little bit more hypertrophy into a already well-rounded routine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, for those of you who are identifying with that random situation, let's give a rating. 3, 2, 1, go.
9. 8. I'm loving it. Yeah. I'm having so much fun bodybuilding again. I mean, for me, it's funny because I feel like I went for even further away from it than you did. Like you would always like had that little love for it, right? Like I remember before, I feel like this was becoming a trend, like you would be doing a couple extra like pec exercises on the cable machine at Achieve and we were all making fun of you.
Like all I'd be looking around like I hope no one sees me do this right now.
So I've much more recently come back around to doing some of it, and I've just been really enjoying it. And because I also love a good burn. Like I really do. You don't like that.
I don't like it at all.
But I actually love it. And so it's been nice to reincorporate that into my routine again and like feel like it's not just the only thing I'm doing. So I don't feel, I used to feel like a good burn, but then also like my joints hurt because I wasn't actually taking care of my whole body. I was just doing single joint movements.
Exactly.
And like
trying
to get strong that way. So now it's like, I'm okay with using pretty like light weights. I think that's the difference too, is that it used to be my whole routine. So I was trying to go heavy with like a lateral raise and a front raise. And like my shoulders were always hurting. It's because I was going too heavy. I just needed to get strong with actual like power heavy lifts. And then just use light weights and like let it burn and just have fun with it. So I'm loving it. All right. Last one, kind of a random one, but this is reverse running.
So reverse running, I believe it got popularized by knees over toes guy.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I think so. I'm sure there've been other people that have been talking about it for quite a while now, but I think he popularized it. And I really like it because, you know, not only do you get sort of like coordination benefits and obviously cardiovascular benefits, but a large...
Wait, do you want to explain what it is?
Oh, reverse running. It's just running backwards, right?
Yeah. But when I first read it, I was like, what is reverse running? For some reason,
crawling on the floor.
It should have been, in my mind, it should have been called running backwards. Like it's the same amount of words.
It should be called backpedaling,
or
honestly.
Or backpedaling. Anyway, so just so you know, just so everybody knows listening, because not everybody would understand that reverse running means running backwards. I didn't.
And and so running backwards, the way he described it, is it's a great way because when you're running forward, there's a lot of impact on your body, your joints, and it can lead to knee pain and stuff like that. When you're backwards running, there's going to be less force overall because you're not running as fast and you're not like striding forward. You're just staying under your base of support the whole time. But you're also strengthening muscles and patterns that are actually going to improve your knee health overall. So you're consistently getting a lot of mini knee extensions as you're running backwards. You're getting mini knee extensions, your quads engaging in a healthy way, and just things feel good when you're running backwards. And it's kind of like a very easy entry point to people with really bad knee pain, which is where I was in before, to basically strengthen their joints and feel like they have something to do and be able to do with their lower body. And so I think his method is you start off backwards walking, then go into backwards running, then do backwards sled drag. So he's all about going backwards, and I like it actually.
Awesome. You just like go out side and start walking backwards on the road, or go to a track and walk backwards? Like
I imagine he wants you to go to a field, so you're not walking backwards. Yeah, which side of the road do you go for backwards walking?
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, we had an argument about which side of the road you walk on. Of course I was right, because I would like Google something like this for safety, but you walk, when you're running or walking, you go toward traffic. When you're biking, you go with traffic.
And that's because your line of sight.
Yes, because you would rather get hit, because biking, you would rather get hit from behind than from the front. If you're riding a bike, you want to get hit if you're going to get hit, you don't want to get hit. But if you're going to get hit by a car, you'd rather get hit from the back.
Oh, okay.
Yep. You don't want to get hit straight on, head on. If you're walking, you have more like control, I think, of jumping out of the way. I feel like then on a bike, you're like, sometimes you don't have as anywhere to go. Like what if there's a guardrail or something like that?
That's true.
If you're walking, you can like jump out of the way and you can see the car coming at you. So if you're walking, you go toward traffic. If you're biking, you go with traffic. If you're reverse walking, you go right down the middle. Just kidding.
You just zigzag.
Anyway, I don't know. Probably safest to go to a track or a field. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I haven't personally done it, so I feel like my rating is not fair. I mean, not fair, but like, I shouldn't rate this one because I haven't tried it myself. Besides, like backpedaling for football, which I like.
Yeah, and you know, funny enough, my knees were so bad at a certain point where I used to play receiver. And that really got to my knees because I'm moving forward really aggressively. I'm cutting and my knees didn't feel good. I switched to defense and I could play it all day because I'm just backpedaling all the time and not putting as much force on my knees. So it's like, oh, this is great, actually.
That's so funny.
So well, just kind of an indirect way. I should have started that. I should have started backwards running guy. But okay. Oh, yeah. Rating. 3, 2, 1, go.
7. Great.
Wow. I mean, it's a 2 out of 8 that we got?
I think so.
But we were pretty much in the same wheelhouse for all of it.
Yeah. I gave one a higher rating than you.
Bodybuilding. Oh, yeah. Funny enough. I assume that you gave it a higher rating because you thought I would give a higher rating and you were trying to match me.
I'm so bad about that. That's like the gray paint.
That's literally what I was thinking about.
So when we were picking our color paint for the basement, I had picked originally this like really, really light gray.
We had 3 colors up on the wall, as you do when you're painting.
And the one I picked was the lightest one. And I had picked it originally. I really loved it. But Jason originally had said it was too light. He's like, it basically looks like white. And I was like, oh, okay. So then we like, between the two of us, we picked 3 different colors and we're like looking at them on the wall. And he's like, okay, let's just say the one we like the best on the wall. He goes, 3, 2, 1. And I said 2 because I liked 1. But I thought he was going to pick 2. And I'm so bad. Like, that's such a sad quality about me is that I want to choose the same thing as you rather than saying the thing that I like. Like, I hate that about myself. I wish I wasn't like that. I'm trying not to be like that. That's something I'm working on. But I really just wanted to be in agreement with you so badly. And so I said 2 and you said 1. And then, of course, I'm like, I liked 1 too. I really like 1. That's the one I actually would have picked. And then I'm like, he's not going to believe me because he thinks that I'm doing what I do, which is trying to agree. But I actually liked that one.
That is, yeah. You were trying to agree in the first place, and then it looked like you were disagreeing, and then you were trying to agree. Yeah, it was like a whole cycle of events.
If I just said the thing I actually like, which is the one I picked, so obviously I should like, I like that one. Oh my God. Anyway, somebody give me some helpful tips on how to just be more assertive about my opinions. It's like, yeah.
But you indirectly influenced me because that's what I picked. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I got my way.
Yeah.
In a very roundabout way.
You just put on this whole story and facade when you're actually like, yes.
I was actually, I was actually just planning and manipulating the whole time. Yeah, definitely. All right. Cool. Anyway.
That was a fun one. I think that I thought it was going to be like 30 minutes or so, but now we're like in the over hour territory. But hopefully you enjoyed the slightly different change of pace. And we are still in the process of planning interviews. If you have anyone specific in mind, please let us know.
Yeah, I got some really good DMs with some great options for interviews. People that I hadn't heard of before, which is really cool. Because what we want to do is bring experts in their field. And it doesn't have to be like the most famous person in their field. It just needs to be somebody who really has a lot of knowledge about something specific within the fitness industry. Yeah. Because we just want to learn from them and we want to bring a different new perspective to our audience. So I got a couple of that I'm very excited about. So we're going to start reaching out, or we already started to reach out to some people to get them set up. We're going to kind of do a combination of some in person, some on Zoom. We're going to probably have some technology to figure out, but we're going to get there. So we're very excited to bring that to you hopefully very soon.
Yeah. I think that's about it. If you could leave us a rating and review on whatever platform that you subscribe to, Apple Podcasts would be awesome as well. But I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Sweat out.
Happiness in. Woo.